we have a roll call, please?
Trustee Robert Bowie.
Here.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman. Trustee Robert Marshall. Trustee Anthony Iasco.
Here.
Trustee Sherilyn Muir.
Here.
Student trustee Paul Julian.
Here.
Board chair John Butler. Committee chair Mark Strauss.
Here. Mr. Blakemore, can you verify that we have a quorum and that appropriate notice of this public meeting has been posted?
Mr. Chairman, we have both the quorum and this meeting has been published pursuant to the
Thank you. The agenda is in the materials. I'd either entertain requests for changes or a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes from the meeting of February 26, 2015 are also included in the printed materials. Can I have a motion to approve those, please?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. In the interest not of making up our lost time, but at least keeping us within our allotted time for this meeting, I'm not going to have any announcements. I will recognize representatives from the University Advisory Committee that are here and ask if there are any comments.
We do have some comments today. Today you are examining the fiscal year 2016 budget preparations. We would like to mention some recent changes approved by our University Council to the Resource Space and Budget Committee, the primary committee providing budget advice to the administration. In anticipation of continued financial uncertainty relative to state allocations, the University Council modified the committee's duties to include providing input on time-sensitive budget issues and revenue generation. It also added a provision allowing the committee to operate outside of the academic calendar year without a quorum, providing there are at least five members present, three of whom must be faculty. Provost Freeman and President Baker were the catalyst for this change. Provost Freeman and Vice President Phillips met with the Resource Space and Budget Committee and the Faculty Senate Executive Committee in March to explain the critical budget issues and expressed a need for continued input from the university constituents after the conclusion of the academic year. We believe this demonstrates a commitment to shared governance and speaks to the interest of having as much input as possible until the budget picture becomes clearer. So thank you for the resource, space, and budget willingness to serve in those roles.
Thank you for your input. We do appreciate it. Mr. Blakemore, regarding public comment, have we had requests for any?
We have not, Mr. Chair.
In that case, we'll move on to the university recommendations. I believe Dr. Phillips is going to make the presentation today, correct?
I believe that is correct.
All right, thank you.
University recommendation, item 7A. Item 7A is the overview of the ongoing fiscal year 2016 budget preparations and preliminary recommendations. As you heard earlier, Mike Mann talked briefly about some of the budget discussions that have been going on in Springfield. Our budget recommendations for this year will reflect the governor's budget. When we put the material together, we had not received input from the General Assembly. Understanding there are a tremendous number of unknowns at this point in time, and while we understand that the our funding recommendations or the appropriation amount will be probably less than the 31.5% proposed by the governor, it will probably be higher than the 6% that was put on the table by the appropriations committees. As a result, going into the budget process for FY16 and not knowing at this point in time what our enrollment revenue will be, our planning will start at the 31.5% budget. And for FY15, our budget, after we gave back $2.1 million, which was a requirement to get us through FY15, our FY15 budget was $424 million. Going into FY16, Our budget proposal will reflect the reductions, and so our preliminary start point will be roughly $395 million is what we're looking at for FY16 is the start point for our budget process.
The recommendation is the university requests the Board of Trustees approval of the preliminary operating budget as presented. Can I have a motion to that effect, please?
So moved.
Motion and a second. Discussion. I have one question. In the budget presentation, university income fund line item includes tuition. What assumption is made? Maybe a better way to phrase that is, how does the university income fund line item number here for when we get down to the total, is the assumption that it would be the same then as FY 2015?
The assumption is the tuition would probably be less. We're starting at the governor's budget recommendation level, understanding that our appropriation will probably be more than the governor's recommendation. Our enrollment, we expect, will be down again this year. And so to take that into consideration, we're going to start at the governor's recommendation level, understanding that the loss of revenue due to enrollment will probably make up the difference.
All right. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 7B is fiscal year 2015 student accident and sickness insurance contract. The board in 2015 approved insurance amount of $7.7 million. This is basically a pass-through that goes to pay student insurance with the vendor. The insurance health fee has generated actually $8.3 million, which is $630,000 over the initial authorization. Therefore, it requires additional approval of the board, and the university requests the board approve the expenditure of authority for FY 2015, which includes the additional $630,000.
May I have a motion to that effect, please?
Move.
Second.
Second. Discussion. I have just one question. Presumably, we knew at some point during the fiscal year that the numbers were out of whack. Is there any reason why we're only discovering it now?
I will let Vice President Weldy address that.
Yes. We do the invoice billing. 85% of the invoice billing during the fall and the spring semesters, and we noticed in March that the net premium that was used to calculate what would go to the broker, we noticed that the FY14 net premium was used and not the FY15 net premium. Although the students were billed correctly, when it went to the board, the wrong net premium was used in the calculation. And so that's why we have the shortage. So the money is there, but we still need the approval in order to pay the invoice.
Thank you for the clarification. Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor? Do we need a roll call vote on this, Trustee
I'm
Coleman?
Let's do a roll call, please.
All right, can we have a roll call, please?
Trustee Robert Boyd?
Yes.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman?
I'm sustaining.
Yes.
Trustee Anthony Iasco?
Yes.
Trustee Robert Marshall?
Yes.
Trustee Sherilyn Muir?
Yes.
Student Trustee Paul Julian?
Yes.
Board Chair John Butler? Committee Chair Mark Strauss?
Yes. Motion carries.
Item 7C, Intercollegiate Athletics Fiscal Year 2016 Secondary Student Health Insurance Contract Renewal. This is secondary insurance that's required in addition to coverage the students may already have through their own primary insurance. It's specifically purchased and designed for NCAA members and is negotiated on behalf of the schools in accordance with NCAA regulations. This amount is for the NCA Group Basic Accident Medical Program Insurance Plan fees and deductible claims coverage. This is renewal number 2 of 9 one-year renewal options. We request the Board of Trustees approve the expenditure authority for this insurance.
I have a motion to adopt the recommendation in the printed materials. Second?
Second.
Discussion? As usual, I guess I have a couple of questions. Is there anybody who can describe to me the parameters of this insurance?
Yes. I would ask Mr. Chaney to address this issue.
Thanks, John.
So as was mentioned, it's a secondary insurance policy. All student athletes already have either their primary insurance through their parents or through the student insurance program. So this is just a secondary that helps manage the cost within athletics, as due to their participation in NCAA athletic events, we do have the responsibility to ensure that they do not have out-of-pocket expense for their injuries that would be incurred representing the university. So that's what this policy fills that void.
So it basically covers what would have been the deductible stop loss and copay?
Correct.
All right, and I'm also interested in what happens if there's later manifestation of an injury that occurs through competitive athletics? It seems to be an issue of some common currency, and I'm not sure what our treatment is.
Currently, as the student athlete completes their eligibility or graduates, they'll do an exit interview with either one of the senior administration that oversees that particular sport, as well as the sports medicine staff. As part of that interview, any medical issues that they've incurred during their career are addressed and documented, those type of things. Their medical records obviously are saved per legal statutes as well. Any current issue is then addressed upon their completion of eligibility or as needed prior to their leaving the university or leaving our care. And then currently issues such as concussions, all those type of things, are obviously working their way through the system. That's part of a much larger scale issue. It's not specifically addressed within this insurance, but once there are funds that the NCAA is putting aside that will cover some of those class action type larger scale issues, but we do a exit interview to ensure that we at least are aware of potential issues that are then documented so that should the issue arise later, it can come back.
Do we have a policy regarding what expenses we would cover for future manifestation of injuries?
That I do not know. I apologize.
Okay.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
Secondary insurance that you referred to earlier,
yes.
Do we always have that? Because I just don't remember. That's why I'm asking.
This is the second year of this particular policy.
Okay, because I didn't remember prior.
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe in the it's more of a cost management because.
It makes sense. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. But I just didn't remember having it before. That's why
yes.
I'm asking.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Next item is Intercollegiate Athletics Fiscal Year 2016 Air Charter Services for the football team. Intercollegiate Athletics requests permission to purchase these services for the football team. Since this item was put together for the FFOC, we actually did receive the proposals. There were two. One did not include the required state forms, therefore it was not considered. Although we budgeted or were requesting $360,000, it looks like that the proposal will be less than that. We don't have the final numbers yet, but it'll be somewhere in the range of $322,000. So we request the Board of Trustees approve the expenditure authority for 2016 in the amount of $360,000.
Not to exceed.
Not to exceed.
All right.
I would vote yes, assuming that the trustees are included.
Don't even go there. Don't even go there.
I will leave that to the chair.
I don't understand the hesitancy.
All right. Can I have a motion? Thank you. Second?
Second.
Any discussion?
No further.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Next item, Oracle and PeopleSoft ERP system annual maintenance renewal. This is the enterprise system that underpins pretty much everything we do at the university. As you know, these maintenance agreements tend to be rather expensive. The annual maintenance cost for the hardware and software is roughly $1.5 million. However, we have entered into an agreement, a long-term agreement, for the next 5 years instead of doing annual replaces or annual renewals that will encompass the software contract as well as or the 9 software support contracts along with the hardware contract, and actually will save us roughly $641,000 over the next 5 years.
And the request is that we approve expenditure authority for FY16 through 2020 for Oracle hardware and software ERP maintenance support services agreement as follows in the printed materials.
Correct, for the 5 year period.
All right, can I have a motion to that effect, please?
Move.
Discussion.
I just have a question.
Yes.
We've had PeopleSoft for a long time. I'm not sure, what do you think, about 10 years or so? Is it then, or longer?
Seven.
17 years. I was just wondering, comparatively, has this continued to significantly escalate, or has it been more just what fair market is generating?
I think the increases, I would have to defer to...
Yeah.
Brent, if you could.
Yes.
Use the microphone. Thank you.
It's a good and fair question, and while I can't go back, many years into what the annual inflationary price increases are, Oracle typically tries to begin negotiations with a 5% per year inflationary maintenance cap written into their agreements. We are currently under the agreements that we have today reflect either 2 or 3% per module per year. And the contract that Vice President Phillips referred to is a renegotiation of that contract based on the financial circumstances that we're in, where we have eliminated those price increases. So we're going from 2 or 3 in our current existing contracts down to 0 this year and for 4 years future. So they do go up over time. Oracle does negotiate from time to time, and we've had a successful negotiation in this round.
Good, thank you.
Okay.
Before you leave, let me ask you a couple of questions too, and then we'll see whether there are other people who have some. So I take it that we're committed to this particular architecture and vendor through 2020 then?
Yes, we are.
And the hardware component, if I recall correctly, there were some servers that came preloaded with software. We approved that not too long ago.
Yes.
Have we fulfilled all of the projected hardware requirements that we'll need through 2020? So if we approve this contract, we're not going to need to add more hardware in the future?
No, that is not correct. This is this maintenance contract doesn't cover replacement of the physical hardware. So there are actually 3 separate hardware platforms that run the 4 different PeopleSoft systems that we have. The one that we purchased, or the one that this board approved several months ago, maybe back in November if memory serves, that one will now be good for the next 4.5 years as it serves out its complete life cycle. But that was the 3rd of the 3 that make up the complete hardware ecosystem. The other 2 have earlier dates and will need to be refreshed at some point.
But if you added additional servers, would they be able to be added to this agreement at a prorated maintenance charge?
Yes, I believe that is the case. Now, I hesitate on that answer only because the architecture doesn't use individual servers. We've essentially bought appliances from Oracle that are self-contained. So to the extent that we're within that same hardware platform and we're simply replacing or upgrading one of the previously purchased, like a 3-year-old appliance, in 2 years we'll need replacing, that like-for-like replacement will be covered under this contract. Similarly, if we were to have the high-class problem of having performance or capacity-related issues because we were to grow in enrollment or budget or grants or something like that, simply memory upgrades, additional disk within the chassis, that would be covered under this agreement as well. So all the future growth that I can foresee would be covered under this contract.
Thank you. Other questions? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 7F, Division of Information Technology, fiscal year 2016 Blackboard software licenses. This request is to purchase 3-year licenses covering the Blackboard learning platform. This would lock in pricing for the next 3 years. As we were putting this together, as you know, the increase is roughly 17% above what we were paying before. We took a look at if there were other alternatives. This is not something we could do in a short period of time. And it, were we to move to a different platform, there would be significant startup costs because we have sunk costs in the Blackboard systems we do have. It does not mean that we could not in the future go to another platform, but it would require a significant amount of time to plan for that into the future. So our recommendation is that we go ahead and approve the 3-year licenses for the Blackboard system.
I have a motion, please, to adopt the recommendation of the printed materials. So
moved.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? I'd like to make a request that we explore the alternatives. I understand that you could have a commitment to this particular approach and that it has value, but when you're looking at a 17.55% increase, and there's nothing to say that we won't continue to get 17% increases, at some point it just makes economic sense to pay the costs. And I recognize that there are costs not just expended, but for the programming and for the training, because it's become embedded in the institution now. But I still think, to be responsible, we need to let Blackboard know that there are other options. And just to be able to negotiate, you need to do that. Sure.
Just briefly?
Yeah, please.
So definitely completely open to revisiting any and all of our software platforms, as we took a re-examination of the PeopleSoft platform in brief earlier this year. For Blackboard, the 17.55% increase reflects not only the contractually obligated maintenance increase or the best negotiated maintenance increase, it also includes an expansion of functionality that we're purchasing, so it's not truly a like for like. It's maintenance on net new modules that we've implemented. So that we would not expect to have again over the course of the next year. The other thing to say is when we do go about re-examining what learning management platform we use, whether it be Blackboard or any of the other competitors in the space, that is a process that really needs to be driven by and decided by the faculty, and we'll need to choose a time when they can be maximally involved. I suspect that during program prioritization won't be the best time to do that. So there may be some interdependencies that could prevent me from initiating that or working with the provost to initiate a review like that, certainly within the next 6 months, maybe within the next 12 months. If the board finds that acceptable, then we'll certainly put that on the list. If you'd like us to explore other options or what it would take to do both of those at the same time, I think Provost Freeman and I would need some time to go back and to consider what that might look like.
Yeah, I appreciate those clarifications because they weren't apparent to me from the printed materials. But I do believe that it would always be in our best interest to make sure that we've explored these alternatives before the procurement decisions come to us. And I'd like to have a feeling of confidence that as a routine matter, anybody who's bringing an expenditure request to the Finance, Facilities, and Operations Committee can give us a level of comfort that if they're renewals, we've gone back to the market and at least kept people honest. If they're new contracts, that we've gotten a representative cross-sections of bids, and that we are doing the best we can to be able to achieve value.
Absolutely.
And I don't say any of this to be critical of the particular proposal that's in front of us today.
Mm-hmm. Point well taken. Could I ask, would you like us to, or let me ask it in the manner in which I would like the answer. Would it be permissible to the board to postpone the review of Blackboard as the sole source of our learning management system for, let's say, the next year, while we let program prioritization play out?
We don't have a convenient forum within which to take a vote on that proposition today, but I I'm not seeing any people jumping up and down at the prospect, so I think it would be a safe assumption that you could, in fact, defer it. And if we could just have everybody comply with the general proposition, that would be great.
Agreed. Thank you very much.
Thanks. All right. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 7G, Waste Management Utilities, Fiscal Year 2016, Solid Waste Removal and Recycling Contract Renewal. This is the seventh year of a nine-year options based on a proposal that dates back to 2008. Prior year request was $420,000. This is consistent with that, and we request approval of the expenditure authority of Waste Management, who has the contract of $420,000.
Can I have a motion, please?
So moved. Second.
Discussion. Yes, please, your senior.
Would you just speak briefly about Waste Management and their commitment to being green as they're our primary vendor in this regard? Or I don't know if you're the person or who better might address that.
I don't know, Tom.
And it's more for the record, because I think it is important that we ask that question when we approve a contract like this.
Came, you risked this.
Thank you, sir. Waste Management is determined to increase their ability to be green. All of our recyclable, all the recycling that we do is handled by Waste Management. We just went through a five-year solid waste plan of how we're handling solid waste, including renewable resources and recycling. I don't have the results of that to share with the board, but we could certainly send it out to you. It had to be filed with the state, I believe, last month.
Let me ask then, at the next committee meeting, that might be at least something I'd be very interested in. I think it's something to put on the record.
Yeah, you may be able to get a representative here to speak to that question instead of having to do it yourself. Let me ask a follow-up question as well. It's something that I've asked before. I've had people who have asked me, particularly at athletic events and other mass gatherings where we have trash generated in great amounts, but people don't perceive that they have recycling disposal options. And I'm wondering whether that's something that Waste Management can do as part of this contract, or if that's on us, or it's just impossible because the drunken hordes won't deposit it in anything more than the single receptacle.
I know that there were at least three efforts, and actually they were student-driven, to do recycling during big events. And one of them, we were in competition with the other universities, and I don't know if somebody here can speak to that a little bit better, where it was a competition to see who could recycle the most at a football game or two. And I think NIU placed 12th or 13th in the list, so we didn't do too bad, but it was all student-driven. I'm not aware of any real recycling that we can do as right now because of the way it is, just everybody comes in and everybody leaves. I know facility staff does, if it's not in a container, if it's laying, they recycle it properly. So if it's laying on the ground, they pick it up, they put it in the right bin.
You know, on the home front, I'm the expert because I get to lock all the garbage cans out come Tuesday night. But I know that more and more now they're defining it as solid, recyclable, and green.
Right.
So green meaning, I presume, when you mow the grass, you dump it in there.
Right.
But I mean, they're really getting sticky to those things.
Yes, and NIU does. We make our own mulch, so we have mulch beds. Some of that is bought, but a lot of it is made from the trees that are cut down.
Right.
And so we do as much as we can, you know, given the staff limitations.
So, Mr. Chair, in the next committee meeting, could we just have a very brief presentation on what we're doing in this regard?
Sounds like a reasonable request to me. Okay. Thank you. All right. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 7H, appropriation transfer authorization. As I mentioned earlier, the FY15 state budget was short about $1.5 billion to get through the end of FY15. To make up for the shortfall, governor swept a number of the funds, and then each of the public universities was asked to give back roughly 2.25% of our 2015 appropriation. In our case, that amounted to roughly $2.1 million. They devouchered a portion of that, which is money that they owed us and had not yet paid us. So $547,000 they kept. And then we had to return the rest of that, and they decremented all of our funding lines. The issue is that one of the lines that they decremented is personal services. When you do that, that starts to impact retirement and Social Security and other issues. So what this transfer does is it takes funds from our other line item and puts it back into the personal services line to bring it back to where it was originally. The reason we're bringing this to the committee is because this transfer has to be approved by our board. It then has to go to the Board of Higher Education for approval by the IBHE board, which will take place on the 2nd of June. It has to then go to the governor's office for approval, and then it finally will go to the comptroller's office where they will actually transfer the funds. But this requires a board approval for us to reprogram money back into personal services so that the cuts do not impact retirement or salaries or anything associated with personal services.
Can I have a motion to approve the recommendation in the printed materials, please?
So moved.
Second. Don't all jump at once.
Second.
Discussion. I just have one question, if you can answer it for me. On the group insurance line item, which I see was reduced about $500,000, which group insurance is that?
Our CMS.
Okay. No other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 7I, scope clarification to previous board approval, preliminary planning for Neptune complex improvements. At the June 19, 2014 Board of Trustees meeting, $1.5 million was approved for preliminary design engineering architectural studies for Home Student Center. While it was understood that that also included the Neptune project, which we're going to hear about here shortly, it was never specifically stated that this covered that that project as well as the $1.5 million included that as well. The funding for Neptune has been previously approved. It will be funded through Build America bonds. It was just an oversight that it was not specifically stated in the previous board item that this also included the Neptune project. We are not asking for any additional funding. This would fall under the previously approved $1.5 million. It's just to correct the record so that we can go forward and there not be any issues or problems associated with the Neptune project.
All right, can I have a motion to approve the recommendation in the printed materials?
So
second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 8 are the university reports. Item 8A is semi-annual progress report of active capital projects. Are there any?
You have a presentation that you'd like to make on 8D, is that correct?
Let's see which one that is.
That's on the Home Student Center Neptune Complex redevelopment plans?
We do.
But no presentation on A, B, or C unless there are questions. So are there questions on 8A, B, or C, or can we pass those? All right, so let's just proceed to the report on item 8D then, please. morning. Whenever you two are ready, please proceed.
Okay. Did everyone at the table receive the printed materials at office?
Yeah. Everybody have one? Okay.
Hello, trustees, and thank you for your time and this opportunity for Mike and I to present this design information for you. The primary projects we'll be discussing today is the Holmes Student Center as well as the Neptune, but really the initial focus has been on the redevelopment of the campus core in general, with Holmes and Neptune really becoming the first projects that are needing to be addressed. The reason we're really focusing on why the core of campus are highlighted on this slide, that student career success, as you know, is a primary focus of the administration and of what we're trying to do currently at NIU, and it requires more than just a high-quality education. It requires the experience, relationships, and experience that shape the futures as well as the academic pursuits. The unique campus places that inspire the students and can enhance their student experience. And NIU can really influence how the core of campus can be influential on their students through this process. So that is really what the focus of this these design teams have focused on as we've moved forward with the Holmes and Neptune projects as well. The framework can provide the long-term vision for the core of campus, and it illustrates how that vision can be implemented over time. We were all charged to make sure that Holmes and Neptune projects looked at their impact on campus, but also as a whole, and specifically the core, not just within their own project boundaries. The intent of the framework was really to instill the order and character of the historical campus within the core, to develop a broad hierarchy of outdoor rooms, making it more of a place, and a sense of place, not just an area. To prioritize the core of campus for the people, for the students, for the campus community, not necessarily for the vehicles as it currently resides right now. To allow for built forms and natural systems to inform, connect, and contrast. The Watson Creek that runs through the center of campus currently is more of a divider than it is a natural feature that we embrace and enhance within the community. It create a landscape that uniquely defines NIU. This is the opportunity to really place an anchor point within campus to develop from and to really establish our identity and what NIU is going to stand and look like going forward in the future. So it creates that landscape that you're going to know you're on NIU's campus and what that really defined as. And then reclaim unremarkable spaces. As we all know, there is a need for parking lots, there is a need for open spaces, but over the years, the plan of campus hasn't necessarily embraced all of those, and some of those are not in the optimal location. So just looking through that and figuring out what the best way to really showcase our campus when prospective students, prospective faculty, just anyone comes and visits the campus in general. So the framework really focused in on six core campus big moves. They tie back into the six items I just discussed earlier, creating a central green space that welcomes and invites the campus community back to the core. It really looks into where how Watson Creek affects that area and how that area can be redeveloped to become inviting and engaging for the students and campus community.
Help me with the Watson Creek location again. I mean, I'm looking at here, I'm having trouble defining where Watson Creek is. Is that by the?
It's the.
This is not the main part.
Creek that kind of runs through just on the creek that feeds it. West right. side of Neptune and then down through the.
Is that by the music campus. Building?
Yes.
No.
Other end. Sorry.
But the other end.
So this is
cool. Between Neptune and
this
building.
This is Holmes.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. In front of Cole. Yeah.
I got it. Thank you.
Sure.
Everybody got excited, but that's okay.
Everybody knows where it is now.
Yeah.
If I could just say something in that regard. I think a lot of people on campus would have the same comment Bob did. What creek?
Right.
And so there's this beautiful water feature, potentially beautiful water feature, that flows through campus. There's a nice round gathering pond outside of Cole Hall, but we're structured to not see it. In fact, we've got a giant parking lot that masks it along the creek. And so a lot of campuses would pay a lot of money to put a water feature in like that. We've got it and we don't use it. And so the core idea is to capture the beauty of that and celebrate it and even use it for teaching and learning and research as an aquatics research center. But we can do that in these shapes and rethinking the whole space to make it an asset instead of an eyesore.
The reason I asked is because for a moment I thought it was a famous skating pond that we're talking about. And over my dead body, will you remove that one? Because that's one of the beauties, the natural beauties of campus.
The lagoons, yes.
Yeah, and it feeds into the lagoon. It goes underground under the parking structure and then pops out into the lagoon. And it's Watson Crick Creek, who were the discoverers of DNA. So that's where it's got two birds.
So where are we on that subject?
DNA?
No.
I'm pro-DNA.
Watson Creek. You want to remove that? Is that what you want to do?
No, we want to enhance it and engage it into the campus rather than being an afterthought.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Then the third big move is adding retail areas. This particular space is shown just currently where the bus turnaround is, just on the west side of Home Student Center along Lucinda Avenue. But really just engaging the spaces that really have a location that can engage both the community as well as the campus and produce retail and revenue for the campus. The connections to the connected.
Could I just ask a question before we move on?
I just want to make mention of this retail because it would seem to me that there are a lot of other implications if we're talking about retail and the oversight. I'm not sure where our regulatory requirements are in regards to including retail. And I just want to make mention of that as we take a look at a whole plan.
Yeah, totally noted. Let's, if we can, how far advanced we are in having a discussion today about this, but I think it might be good to get the rest of the orientation to this concept first, and then I'm sure there'll be many questions.
Look forward to it. We can connecting the campus core with the southwest area of campus due to Watson Creek and the altered orientation that southwest core of campus has. It's not a true northwest true north-south or east-west orientation of the buildings. They're at a diagonal, so really trying to figure out how that engages campus, because most campuses are laid out in quadrant lines and those type of things. So really engaging that part of campus back into the core and including it in the core. Allowing Carroll Avenue to become a north-south corridor. Currently, as I mentioned earlier, there's a parking lot off Carroll Avenue. And there's a kind of an endpoint. There's also the Pizza Hut down at the Lincoln Highway, those type of things. So really making that more of a window into campus rather than simply a street or an access point is something that the design teams were looking at. And redesigning MLK Commons to be more user-friendly and to become a gathering space that currently isn't fully utilized as.
On the Commons area, is there any commercialization with vendors going in there?
Not currently, but we will address how that would be engaged in a couple more slides.
I think there may be some opposition there. Go ahead, please.
Okay. So the core really becomes the east-west connection, is what the organizing structure slide shows. Currently, it does have that connection, but this really clarifies it and puts it in a linear term and reduces a lot of the current obstructions that limit the connection between the east and west sides of campus going through the core and makes it a welcoming area. This is a illustration of what can be in 2040. The 2040 concept is really just to show what could be done and where potential building sites for the future development of campus are possible. We are by no means proposing to the board at this time to build 9 new buildings or anything like that, or where they would necessarily be site approval, those type of things. But strategically increasing the density of the core can be used to improve the functionality and the convenience of campus for the campus community, reducing the outside commute between buildings, improving the efficiencies of bringing the services and academic spaces closer together can really enhance the student as well as the community members' experience while they're on campus and in the core. So going forward, the actual Holmes and Neptune design process, although they were two separate processes, Mike and I were asked by President Baker to co-chair the core committee, which really focused to bridge the gap and make sure that the two processes were working simultaneously, as well as looking at the core campus so that they weren't only focusing within their site boundaries or within that, their own perimeters of building. And so the process for each project was similar, that both very inclusive for representatives from different user groups, as well as campus and community groups. The design team worked extremely hard to gather the information and input from all viewpoints and assist them in development of their concepts. The core committee helped to guide the projects, but each project also had their own design teams, utilized their own focus groups, and used student engagement, interviews, and other research tools to get to their own independent conclusions. And then collectively, those were brought back to the core committee, and the core committee was used to really find what the primary focus of those areas needed to be and how this needed to be implemented across campus and within both projects. Multiple campus departments, both academic and administrative, community leaders, students, and alumni were engaged in throughout the process. At this time, I'd also like to recognize the efforts of Ben Ritter, Belinda Roller, and Tom Robleski from NIU's Architecture and Engineering Services, who served as the project managers and helped us manage these projects and coordinate the design teams, which there were 6 different companies that incorporated in three different sets of 2 of design teams, so that was by no means an easy task to keep them organized, let alone all the different constituents. So I appreciate everyone's efforts in keeping the project moving forward and actually getting to our deadline, which was to be able to present to this board today. So having started in January, that was a fairly aggressive timeline with design and reaching the concepts, and I appreciate their efforts and the efforts of everyone involved. What we did find for Holmes, based on the research, was there are several themes. The student career success, recruitment and retention, creating a social density at the campus core, creating a place to celebrate Huskies culture, a transformational change, the wow effect. You may or may not be wowed when you walk into the current Holmes Student Center, but really looking into how we can do that within a transformational change of the building, celebrating the entrepreneurial culture of campus at NIU, and shifting from transactional to relationship experience, rather than the only reason to really go into Holmes in some instances is to make a transaction, to pay a bill, to go to the one card, to do that type of thing, rather than to really stay in there and experience your fellow students and your fellow campus members. So really trying to figure out how that type of a relationship can be developed, and then leveraging the alumni connections for all the multiple ways that they can be engaged as well. So the strategies that were come up through this research was fixing the economic engine. As I talked about the engagement piece and reasons to go into Holmes Student Center, the food, retail, as well as the hotel. Those areas are areas that we could definitely focus on to engage in a manner that really draws students and the campus community into the building and develop that further. Return student life to Holmes Student Center. They're currently over in the Campus Life Building across Lucinda. Returning those organizations to Holmes Student Center would allow all the students that are engaged in those activities, also those that want to come in and have engagement with those activities and organizations, to be able to utilize Holmes Student Center.
leverage the current assets. There are some great things within Home STEM Center. They're just, you can't get to them easily or you don't know about them, such as the Husky Den and MLK Plaza. Increasing the daylight, the architecture just currently is not an engaging architecture for the exterior and the interior. There's ground level, it's below grade, so there's only windows on the west side, those type of things. So really finding a way to engage the entire building. Responsible stewards, the building is an aged building. It's early 60s, mid 60s was the initial construction. So finding a way to ensure that that building is sustainable for a longer period of time, and the internal systems are all upgraded as well. Upgrading the conference spaces, new programming spaces, a reason to stay on the weekends. Holmes is really an opportunity to enhance the student experience throughout. If you can create additional spaces that students can utilize and attract. It's actually a quite busy building, but because of the way it's laid out, it's not really known by the students as to what activities are going on and how they can utilize it. And then increasing the lounge space, making it another area similar to the library where you can go, you can study, you can hang out, you can have engagement with the students and with fellow faculty, those type of things. So this is the existing conditions, particularly on the ground floor. As you can see, it's very compartmentalized. So you can enter, you know, through the stairwell, you can enter over by the transit hut, you can enter on the north side, but there's no connection of any of the facilities, there's no flow through the building. Everything has to be done through small corridors. You have to go through the bookstore to get to an area, through a fairly empty food area, those type of things. So there's a lot of potential within the building, but it's currently, based on its existing conditions, just not an engaging space. So this is the phase one concept plan of the ground floor. Continues to keep many of the same features that we have, just enhances those. Also opens everything up so there's a flow through in the building. You could come in any of the entrances, whether it be the north entrance, coming off Lucinda, you can walk through the building. This area would be the student involvement and leadership area and organizations. This would become where your hotel desk is to engage that particular location. This has a outdoor patio area so that this would actually be lowered so that there'd be a connection to the outside, to the MLK Commons, excuse me, to be able to go directly into the building and have that engagement with the rest of campus rather than having to go down a separate set of stairs, those types of things. And then the transit area is obviously a very popular area utilizing the buses, and so having an area where they could come in and utilize Home Student Center. And then these are identified as potential areas for different retail opportunities, whether it be food, kind of a convenience store market type of an area, a tech or bookstore area, additional food areas, and then the Husky Den really becoming more of a sports den, a sports bar per se, type of an activity that really engages the students and allows them some place to go after hours, that type of a thing. So although these are all identified as these particular locations, as we go through the design process, really figuring out what that means, whether that is whether the bookstore, as it's traditionally known as the bookstore, comes back, or if it's just more of a market, more of a spirit wear, those type of things really need to be fleshed out. But this at least gives us a floor plan and a conceptual plan to build off of and work through.
Should I wait, or?
You know, I'm wrestling with time management. We're so far behind. I'm wondering, I know that there's going to be a lot of curiosity, but nobody has seen this until, you know, it was dropped on the desk. I haven't seen it either. And what I might suggest, if it's okay with the rest of the committees, is if we get the balance of the report today and then just defer consideration of this for another meeting. Otherwise, I know people have other commitments, and we're already, you know, 2 hours plus behind schedule. Does that generally suit what the committee would like to do? I don't mean to minimize the questions. They're all important. I just I don't know how we'll even get through the presentation if we do
so it. We probably killed more time than the questions.
Okay.
Let's defer questions, please. That's
all
good.
Right. Thanks, Wheeler. I appreciate it.
So these renderings show the capstone facility that's also proposed. This would be a new building that would be off the southwest corner of the Home Student Center into MLK Commons and become a on the west end of the commons. The addition of this cornerstone building within the core campus allows for a full integration of the student life activities, as well as become a further extension of the student engagement hub that we want to create here at NIU. Budget, as always, is a large portion of the question. We will be, the Home Student Center can be broken down into several phases to be completed within realistic financial budgets in a reasonable time frame. All the financing and available funding is now being evaluated over the summer, and a full financial plan moving forward will be presented to this committee in the August meeting. The current phase one funds include the ground floor concepts that were shown. However, with the initial budget, we identified approximately $16 million through Build America bonds or building reserves that could be utilized for these areas. But either the Student Life or the Husky Den area is included within that $16 million. That's why there's asterisks on this particular slide. They could both be included, but it would raise the initial budget to $19.7 million. So, and those are obviously our estimates just based on square footage and the conceptual design at this point, not hard bid numbers by any means. The financial analysis, as I said, will be done over the summer to help determine the exact scope and budget of phase one. The capstone building, although indicated as a phase four, could be done at any point, depending on how that particular facility would be funded. The designs take into consideration future needs, as well as the capstone building, to make sure the proper infrastructure is in place as we go, so we're not demolishing or having to remodel anything that we've already built in the earlier phases as we go forward. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Mike Stang for his review of the Neptune project.
Thanks, John. I don't know what's worse, following the award-winning student nationally award or being the last half of the last presentation after a six-hour day. So let me see if I can give you a quick synopsis of the Neptune design team and the work that they've done over the last 6 months. As John has shared with you, the design teams use pretty much the same strategies in terms of trying to gather stakeholder input on the possible renovations. The Neptune-specific findings included a need to reinforce the development of the campus core. Respondents indicated that could be accomplished by improving the east-west circulation both within the building, which is pretty much a nightmare, and on the exterior south end of the building. In addition, the housing quality and amenities need to be improved in order to bring Neptune up to the level of our other housing options. In order to accomplish this, we need to provide the ability for individual temperature control in student rooms. Student rooms and bathrooms need to offer additional privacy, and community and dining spaces need to be upgraded. A third finding was the need to reinforce and improve efforts to support our living learning communities, and this can be accomplished with improved meeting space and adding community-specific amenities. Similar to the plan for the Home Student Center, the designers have proposed a multi-phase vision which would allow us to meet these identified needs and much more. Phase one, which is identified here in the light blue on the drawing, calls for a newly defined thoroughfare that would allow us to begin the process of upgrading the building mechanicals while also improving student access to both Neptune Central and the east and west residential communities. The idea is that once the horizontal utility improvements are in place, the first phase would then allow us to begin vertical renovation, beginning with student lounges and restrooms on the lower floors and moving upward throughout the facility. Phase two, which is the darker blue in the center, focuses on the renovation of Neptune Central, where both the main dining center and the Trident grab-and-go outlet are located. Window replacement and improving the courtyard between Neptune Central and Neptune North are also a part of phase two. Later phases focus on the renovation of Neptune North as a standalone project and propose a possible new housing facility on the west end of the current complex. These improvements would allow us to move fairly rapidly, at least initially, from our current condition, which you can see here on the slide, a well-maintained but tired and dated Neptune Hall, to a more contemporary housing complex that would provide improved study and social space with enhanced natural light
and a more straightforward navigation path throughout the building. The design team believes that this can be accomplished in phase one. As John indicated, work is still being done to identify funding sources for all of these projects, but our designers have provided an initial budget that would allow us to achieve each of these phases as funding was identified, in a similar manner to what they provided for the Holmes Student Center. So as, oh, I'll go back. I think people, oh, I can't do that, can I? No. How do I go back? So as you can see, much has been accomplished by both of the design teams, yet much work remains to be completed. The intention for both of our committees is to return to the fall FFOC meeting once the state budget and the fall enrollment picture are a little bit clearer. Work is going to be done throughout the summer, as John indicated, to better understand the university's reserve position and understand what other revenue sources might be available to fund any of these proposed projects. And then in the fall, we will return with final recommendations on initial projects that will include intended funding sources and a firmer timeline. At this point, that's probably enough information to get us started with maybe some questions. I don't know how you want to proceed or if Dr. Phillips or Dr. Baker want to make any additional comments, but that's what we had wanted to share with the board today.
No.
All right.
Here's the only concern that I've got. I don't think we're going to get to the point where we have a thorough reaction from the committee today. And I don't want to put us in a position where what's going to happen is that you're going to go spend another $1 million, assuming that this concept is acceptable, before the board has had a chance to endorse it. So I'd be open to whatever we can do in scheduling to try to accommodate this and still keep the project on schedule, at least consideration of this, but I don't think we're going to get as far as you'd like us to get today. And if we need to have another, you know, find a date for another meeting, that might be the best way to be able to accommodate this.
I thank you for that. I agree. There's a lot here. This, believe it or not, this is an abbreviated slideshow. We had, 80 slides or something before that got shrunk down here. There's a lot of really exciting things in here, and there's a big price tag too. And we have some reserves, maybe a quarter of what we need here, but we also have ideas on additional revenues. And so we need to come back to you and give you a fuller picture of all those, and we'd, I think, be willing to come sit with you in smaller groups, you know, one or two of you at a time, and go over this in detail. If you want to have those deeper conversations in that setting, or we can come back and or come back at a full board meeting.
Yeah, I'll be open to input from the committee members too, but personally, it seems to me that it would be nice to have an initial meeting where we had a chance to all listen to one another and make sure that we had a consensus on the general direction. And then I think it would be appropriate for there to be other meetings where people who have more in-depth questions, they'd have the opportunity to be able to get them answered.
It's just too much to absorb all at one time. But first of all, I would prefer what you're saying is that come back to the next meeting, the next board meeting, and then have the overview again so that we don't miss anything, because quite frankly, this mind is all soaked up today. And then maybe we'll then go into the 2 or 3 member detailed discussion. They'll give us a better chance to absorb it that way. Otherwise, won't we do injustice to this? What you're saying.
The intent of today wasn't to get any further approvals. We currently have reached the point of design where we're pretty much at a point where now it's within university administration to determine how to move forward at this point. So we do not need necessarily board approval, and that was not the intent of today's presentation. It was more informational, just to give you an update based on your approval to where we were at this point. So. We realize it's a lot of information. We apologize. We weren't able to get it out. It was, as Dr. Baker said, it was getting it concise, and it was kind of the final phase was approved last night. So we wanted to make sure we got you the latest information, and so we can appreciate the board's desire.
No offense is taken. Yes, please.
One of the considerations and the constraining factors is we have a time limit in which we can use the Build America bonds. I think it's by the end of 2016, so we certainly didn't want to keep kicking the can down the road. We wanted to get going with this, and the design work was to a point where we felt we were comfortable in bringing it to the board, at least initially.
For our next committee meeting, that we review this whole thing again?
Well, I think it might make sense if the committee members are willing to do this to wind up with a special meeting before the August meeting.
Otherwise,
we're going to wind up in exactly the same position that we're in again. Would at least the quorum be willing to entertain the notion of having a special meeting of this committee sometime before August?
That's okay with me. I'm in favor of it.
All right. Well, let's see whether we can find a date to do that.
That's the key thing. Yeah.
All right.
That'd be great.
Is there consensus for that?
It's too important to not rush into this meeting.
We do have a board meeting.
We leverage that same day when we're all together to have a special committee meeting.
I'd certainly be willing to consider that. I don't yet have a sense for what the business will be for the full board meeting, but I can discuss that with. I saw John for a minute, but is he gone now? Okay. All right. So we can certainly discuss that with the board chair and see whether we can do it on that day if it works for everybody else. And if not, we'll see whether we can find something else. Are your ears burning? All right, so we've obviously got a complicated subject here, and the suggestion was made that maybe we could schedule a special meeting of this committee on the June date for the full board meeting. Would you give that some consideration, and then we can see whether that schedule works or we need to find another date?
Okay.
Sure. All right. Any other compelling business relating to this agenda item today? If not, are there other matters to come before the committee? All right, I take it, pending the resolution of our next meeting date, the next meeting that we have in the books for this committee is August 27th. And can I have a motion to adjourn, please?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Discussion on that motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.